Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Oh, man, we are honored to have you here.
Say it, brother.
This is the biggest heavyweight fight since...
Dun, dun, dun! It's the biggest heavyweight fight since I can remember, put it that way. A long, long time. Bob Arum was quoted saying it's the biggest since Frazier Ali won. Other people have said since Lennox Lewis, Holyfield. Other people have said since Lewis, Mike Tyson. Either or, they're all a long time ago. This is the biggest heavyweight fight in recent history, that's for sure.
Wow, and since it's a big fight, it's a rematch, you got some changes in your game plan. You changed trainers. You say you're going to weigh 270. Years ago, I used to weigh 270. You don't look 270.
Well, don't look 370.
No, you look less than that.
Cheers,
but,
man.
But a lot of people think you won the first fight, but you have these changes. Why the changes?
You know, because I got a draw last time. It wasn't a win. And a draw to me is as good as a loss. So we're going for the W this time. I'll bring in some serious knockout trainers, and we're going to look for the knockout, Kronk style.
Now, why the knockout?
Detroit, baby, what's up?
Okay, I heard you. I think Detroit felt that. The second round prediction of a knockout that in the fight that you went down a couple times, and it was a draw. Why are you making this bold prediction?
Because last time I had 3 years out the ring. I had two easy sparring contests, and I fought Deontay Wilder after being active for 6 months. I couldn't have been at my best. I had to lose 147 pounds before that fight and then jump in there with one of the guys who's been made 8 defences of his title. And that Deontay Wilder, in my opinion, was one of the probably the best one I've ever seen him. And he still couldn't be the Gypsy King on my worst night. So over a year later, he ain't got no chance. I'm going to slap him around the ring, no problem.
It's fascinating, though. I mean, Marcellus and I watched that fight together. I believe it was your birthday. And most people believe, like, if not for the knockdowns, you won the fight. So it feels like if you just stay on your feet and stick with the same game plan, you would win.
Yeah, but, you know, thinking... I thought I won the fight, but thinking just ain't good enough. You know, I'm here to win. I'm here to put on a great show. You know, I've got thousands and thousands of fans travelling overseas to see a great fight. This is being dubbed as the biggest fight in the last 20 years. So I want to put on a great show here in Las Vegas. I want to give my fans something to cheer for, and I want to go home victorious. But before that, I want to go out with all my fans in Las Vegas and get absolutely fucking smashed!
Jorge!
When I hear you talk about a knockout and carrying extra weight, it sounds to me like also, I don't want it to be in the judge's hands. I want to decide this fight.
You know, me and Deontay Wilder, we both hold our own destinies right here in both hands. It's up to us to deliver. You know, the judges are going to be fair. The referee is going to be fair. I've got no complaints at all. The Las Vegas State Commission are going to do a fantastic job at... being the officials for this fight, and I've got no doubts that Top Rank or the commission are going to do a fantastic job. But on the night, it's down to me and Wilder, the only two men that count, really.
Yeah, and look, let's be real. If you were to go into Wilder's camp and they hear that, oh, he wants to be heavier, and he wants it to end early, maybe these punches are really hurting. He needs to get out of there quick. Or what do you say to that criticism?
You know, there's no criticism. They can take what they want from me coming in heavy, me looking for a knockout. The one thing I will say, though, is every time I've always looked for a knockout, I've got one. Every time I've took a fight to into a dogfight, I've always won. I've never lost it toe-to-toe with anybody. The only time I've ever been caught is when I've been boxing. So, you know, I don't want to get caught in this one. I don't want to be getting knocked down. I want to drag him into a dogfight from round one, and we'll see who's got the biggest cojones on the night. That's for sure.
You know, in the first fight, there was a bit of a racial element to the pre-fight coming up, and boxing has a long tradition of...
I'm not so sure about that, though. You know, I'm not sure there was no racism in the fight. I didn't say any.
No. Not racism, but like there was a racial element to the pre-hype, hyping the fight. They used Great White Hope versus black fighters, a traditional storyline.
Yeah, but we're all human beings. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, pink, or green. We share the same blood. We are humans. This fight isn't a racial war between blacks and whites. This is a fight between the two most high-performance heavyweight on the planet, going toe-to-toe. There's nothing racial about this fight. I've got nothing against Deontay Wilder as a man, and he has nothing against me as a man. But as two fighters, we really want to give it each other. And on Saturday night, we're going to see it!
I hear that answer as... the fight sells itself. It doesn't need any extra. You got two great fighters who both are looking for knockouts. You don't need any extra.
No. We're both undefeated heavyweights in 12-year careers. We both turned pro in 2008. The late, great Emmanuel Stewart predicted both of us would be heavyweight champions of the world. Our paths have crossed before. We've got to draw. We've got to do it again. And I'm really looking forward to it. This is what I was built for, the big fights in Las Vegas. This is my third fight here, back-to-back in Las Vegas. Deontay Wilder fought here last time in Las Vegas. We're putting it all on the line for the fans. You know, me and Deontay, we have a lot to lose. We have all our reputation, everything we've built up over the years, all goes on the line on Saturday night. But the real winners in this are the fans across the world, because they get to see, for the first time in a long time, the two best in the divisions fighting each other. Even though we're from rival promotion companies and rival TV networks, we're setting a precedent here to say, look, when the best want to fight each other, doesn't matter which TV you're with, which promoter you're with, it can happen. And hopefully this year will be the battles of, in all weights, the best versus the best. No slacking, no hiding. Whoever's the best in the division, come out and fight each other, because the heavyweights are back. We're ruling the division. We're on top. Glory days are here again.
All right. I love all that. I want to get into your emotional build-up to the fight this Wednesday right now. You say no hiding, but dude, you're walking around with a hat, a hoodie, sunglasses on, 6'7", the champ. We know who you are, but there is an emotional play and build-up for the fight. Where are you right now on a Wednesday?
You know, I'm cool, calm, collected, tall, dark, and handsome, super sexy. I think we've all heard that before. You know, I'm cold as ice, honestly. I'm cool. Do you know, it's a fight to me. I've been boxing my whole life. Boxing and fighting my whole life. And before I was coming back for this, I battled the hardest demons that anyone could ever battle. Anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder. Right. And you know what? I'm still here telling the story. I'm still here fighting, so... what can defeat me? Why should I be nervous over a boxing fight?
You should be so excited, and I want to use your perspective to give us an understanding. You've been boxing your entire life.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is the biggest fight in terms of promotion and sales, but what does it feel like to you in terms of distance or how great this is, the spectacle this week compared to fights of old?
You know, I boxed in some big fights. I went to Germany, Dusseldorf, to fight Klitschko, who was considered the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world with 26 title defenses in his own country. That was pretty big. 50-odd thousand people at a massive football stadium. I boxed in some really big cards in the UK. I boxed Wilder at the Staples Center. But, you know, this has a special feeling to it. Mm. This is the monster fight of the decade. This is the fight everybody's been waiting to see for over a year now. And you're getting both fighters in the prime. I don't think nothing can compete with this at the moment. This is the biggest fight in contact sports right now. Not just boxing, any sport, anything. This is the biggest thing that's going on right now. And I can't see anything being bigger. You know, we're the two biggest fighters on the planet, including any contact sport, and we're both getting it on, so what's not to like?
You say that with such pride, but then the journalist in me says, what if McGregor and Mayweather...
No!
Oh, no, too much?
No.
Too much? Okay.
Too much.
So no respect for that.
Back off.
No
respect. Knocking nobody down.
No respect for that. Okay.
Hey, I want to ask you this. We had Deontay Wilder on the show from the Super Bowl, and it sounds like you two have a mutual respect and kind of halfway like each other. That seems unusual.
Do you know what? There ain't no respect. Honestly, I think Deontay Wilder's a pussy, and I don't mind saying it.
Okay.
And, you know, I reckon if I started a chant now, this place would go absolutely nuts. Do you want to hear what Wilder is? Wilder is a pussy. La, 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 la. What?
Jimmy, but he's got a couple of questions for you before we let you go.
Oh, you just gonna make me fall in behind that? You want me to calm that down?
Come on, Uncle Jimmy.
Let's see what you got. Look, I just got a question about your training.
Go on. What
now,
is
I
it?
Respect everything about you, but did I read somewhere that part of your training regimen is you masturbate 7 times a day?
What is going on?
I can only able to do that because I'm using Easy Stroke by Gypsy King.
So I guess it's
the finest revolution in the nation.
So I guess it's safe to say that you a beater and not a cheater, huh?
Oh yeah.
Sports app. Champ, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having
me. Looking forward to it. The polite respect kind of went out the window yesterday. Is it because we're so close to the fight, the animosity is getting turned up?
Yes, you know, it's everything you said, yeah, it's correct. You know, it's getting so close. You know, it's Thursday now. Saturday is the fight. I've been thinking it was Thursday for like 2 days now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's been, you know, the anticipation for it, you know, the promotion that's been involved with the two big sport network, Fox, ESPN, you know, all the loving crowd that's came out, that have came out, you know, all over the world. You know, it's ready. The emotions came out. You know, in that press conference, you know, all the other press conferences, we know we was cordial with each other. You know, I like Fury, though. You know what I'm saying? You know, and like I've told you before,
I know.
You know, especially dealing with the heavyweight division, where we were and where we are now, it's a big difference. And we need two characters like ourselves to entertain the crowd, but not only entertain, but when it's time to show up, we're definitely going to show out.
Now, look, you just said it, and you said that at the Super Bowl when we were talking, that you like Fury, but you got a strange way of showing that, you know, because the way it went down yesterday, did he touch any buttons with you? Because it certainly looked like you got under his skin yesterday.
Well, I definitely got under his skin, you know, with certain things, but, you know, certain things I just keep to myself when it comes to certain fighters. You know, especially when they're dealing with their personal lives, and so, you know, I keep it, but, you know, it was just one of those things where, you know, you bring your emotions out and you bring your best piece out at that time. You just let them know that, you know, this is a remembrance. You know, I had to remind him where he were at some point in time and who brought him to the big time box. Who put the food on his table for not only himself but his family in a harsh time in his life. And I'll do it over and over again for him, just like I've done for a lot of other fighters, giving them the opportunity when I had less opportunity. Many people say, "Why haven't you unified?" And it's a simple question, because I haven't had the opportunity to do so as all the other guys, because of the power I display, my demeanor about myself, and my warrior mindset and my king demeanor. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, some would say you crossed the line because you went personal. I wouldn't call it that, but you went all in. Why the choice to go all in on a Wednesday press conference?
Yeah, because I heard an interview, and he was talking about how he brought me to big time boxing. All right. And, you know, and I kind of found it offensive for him to say so when, you know, we know where we came, how far we've came. He know the journey that he came from, you know, and he know why he's in this position. Not only did I bring him back, but I did something that a lot of champions wouldn't do. I gave him 50-50. Mm. I said, bro, I'm going to bring you back, and I'm going to give you half of the pie. Mm. How many people would do that? You know what I'm saying? That's just my heart as a champion, my heart as a person, to look at a person that's down, you know what I'm saying, down on his shield. You know, he was overweight, you know, he was abusing himself with drugs, and he was contemplating about killing himself. And I knew he was one of the best in the division. I just didn't want to see a man like that, you know, go down in history to do so much, to do a great deed in boxing, and then just to destroy himself like that. So I wanted to bring him back, and not only bring him back, I wanted to give him half of the pie, and let's make the best of the remainder of boxing.
And then whoop him up.
Deontay, I think most sports fans start out at some level as little kids as athletes. And we all have these big dreams. I was a kid, oh, I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame, in the NFL, blah, blah. Didn't make it quite. You are actually right on the cusp of realizing perhaps the greatest dream that a boxer could have. The whole world is watching this fight. It's like a Super Bowl. It's like a big time Muhammad Ali fight, Mike Tyson fight. What is that feeling like to reach the pinnacle of your sport and have the whole world waiting to see your performance?
It's an absolute honor, and it's an amazing feeling, you know, just to be where I am now. And just to reflect on where I came from, you know, we all have stories about how we started and where we are now. We always say started from the bottom and now we're here, you know, at the top. And you know, to be in this position, it's like I've been marinating for years. I've been seeing other guys, you know, get to a certain level of fame and fortune, and you know, I never complained. And I sat back. You know, I never hated on anyone. I always show love, always show respect, because my energy is of that. I come with a positive energy, a positive mind, and a positive spirit, knowing that, you know, God don't make mistakes. And I know my time will come, and it's here. And now that it is here, I'm taking full advantage of it. But, you know, to be honest, to be in this position and have so much around me at this moment in time, you know, and to be acknowledged by my work, you know, that I've done thus far, you know, it don't allow me to obtain the big head or feel like I'm better than anyone. I'm still the same old me. I still do the same old regular things that I do. I never feel like I'm higher than anyone in this room. You know what I'm saying? It's all love and positive energy for me. And I know this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, I like I said before, we all have greatness in us, for greatness is only determined by service. And that's just each and every time that I'm in my occupation or even outside of my occupation, I want to provide my greatness. I'm a leader. You know, I lead by example. I'm a trendsetter. You know, I've always been that way. My father always taught about me and my brothers to never be like no one else. Be yourself, because it's more comfortable being in your own skin, being yourself, knowing what you can do and what you can't do. And what you can't do, you can train yourself. They say practice make perfect. And you can do that within your household and then bring it outside of your household. I never want to carry that burden on me that I live beyond my means or I do things that are not of me. And then when I go home, I have to take that vest off and say, you know, nobody's looking. I can be myself. It's too hard for that, you know what I'm saying? So I've always abide by my principle, my morals and goal as a man, as a father, as someone to look up, or even as a role model. Many people don't want to be labeled as role model because, I mean, we're human. We're going to make mistakes along the way. And, you know, when we make mistakes and when you have a certain profile in life and you make mistakes, people are always throwing sticks and stones at you, you know? And that's the reason why a lot of people don't want to be role model. But I tell people, for me, if you want to consider me as a role model, you got to take me wholeheartedly as I am. I am who I am. I'm not perfect. I let that be knowledgeable. And, you know, and we can work together as people, as a human race, and to grow as what we want to be, you know?
Man, you up here testifying. You just caught the Holy Ghost, it felt like, man. I mean, I ain't gonna lie to you. And you know what? I respect you so much and fully. But physically, you're right here. I just touched you. He's right in front of all of us. But emotionally, mentally, we haven't been in this position before, fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world in front of millions of people. Where are you emotionally right now and mentally preparing for this fight?
Emotionally and mentally, I'm just ready to go. I mean,
so if we can fight right now, you ready to fight right now?
I'm ready to go.
You don't want to build anymore? Huh?
You know, for me, like the week of the fight is like, it's like torture for me. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the preparation for the fight. People don't understand, like, as a fighter, like, we go through so much as fighters. You know, it's more than just we get in the ring and we beating up on each other and making a lot of money. It's more than that. You know, a lot of people are like, you know, some people don't even want to see you on vacation. Like, man, get in the ring. You fight. You're supposed to be in the gym training. I'm like, but we got outside of boxing, we have a family, you know, that we have to take care of and certain obligations that we have to fulfill, you know, and it's not just consist of just being in the ring all the time and training and different things like that. And people don't understand, like, the hard work that it takes to stay relevant, to be a fighter for one, and to stay relevant. Because I say all the time, we risk our lives for others' entertainment. And boxing is not a game. It's not a sport where you go in there and you're going to play some games.
Oh, we know.
You can't play boxing.
Come on.
Nah, nah.
Come
on, yeah, man. You don't play boxing.
Deontay, I want to ask you this while you're in this mindset. We just had Leonard Ellerbe up here, and I don't want to disrespect Floyd in any way. Floyd Mayweather carried this sport for a long time. But I believe the heavyweight can carry it even higher because of the knockout power, because of the 100, 200-year history of the heavyweight champion being the baddest man on the planet, don't you think you or Fury, if this fight goes off the way that we think it will carry the sport back and benefit the entire sport?
Most definitely. I truly believe in that. You know, they say when you have a rich heavyweight division, so does all the other division live. You know, the money has grown, the popularity has grown, you know, in all divisions. And, you know, everything is, the way it's forming and everything is blossoming like a beautiful flower. Like, it's amazing to be a fighter at this point in time and to see all the fans is coming together where new people meet, where new people around meet old, and they meet new people to gather around all around the world. You know, it's a beautiful thing to bring the low class with the middle class with the high class, and we all commune together as one. And you go for your side, and that other side go for their side. So it's a beautiful thing to see in this beautiful sport of boxing. And I think it always has been the same. You know, that when you have a strong heavyweight in the division, you know, long live the whole division as a whole.
So yesterday, Tyson was asked about a racial dynamic in this fight. He was asked at the press conference. I asked him about it, but again at the press conference. Let's hear what he said, and it seemed like you seem to be shaking your head.
I'm not reading into all this this racial thing with a black man versus a white man on Black History Month, and you know, I will refuse to go into any sort of a thing about it. You know, we are two human beings, two heavyweights on top of our game. This is not a racial war. This is two heavyweight boxers going toe to toe for all the jewels in heavyweight boxing. Nothing more, nothing less.
To this day. What do you think of that response?
Well, I think he just misinterpreted the whole situation about Black History Month, you know, and me being involved, me as a black man and being involved as a champion and really celebrating this month. This is my month, you know what I'm saying? This is me setting history in my month. And I don't think he really understood that, you know. When the journalists stated his question, he didn't come in a way of where it can be racist, you know what I'm saying? He came in for us just to celebrate this month, you know what I mean? To uplift it, and he wanted to see how I thought of it and how much it means to me. I mean, and I want to set history in this, you know, I am Black History, you know what I'm saying? I've been Black History, and I'm gonna continue to be that each and every time. And, you know, I just think he took it in the wrong way.
Now, why do you feel that the lead narrative hasn't been race when in years past and fights of old, black fighter, white fighter, we're going to sell that as our lead narrative? Why not this time?
I mean, it's many reasons, but one specific reason I think is that, you know, he's a gypsy. And anybody know anything about gypsy, they're traveling people. And they get treated just as bad as we do, you know what I'm saying? Although I feel, you know, we have been treated way worse than any culture, you know, any race. And, you know, we have the proof and the artifacts to prove that, you know what I'm saying? The picture still go on. But him being as a gypsy, you know, people treat them, people treat his people, you know, in a wrongful way, and in a way that, you know, a human being shouldn't treat a person. And I think that's, you know, with this situation, me and being him, I don't think it class to be racist or anything, because, you know, we all go through things in life, man. It's the human race. We all don't need it though.
This fight sells itself.
Exactly.
The thing we were talking even before you came on. This is the first time I really remember where both fighters are likable.
Yeah.
In terms of, that's usually one guy's the bad guy, one guy's the good guy. We don't even have that element here. Both of y'all have big personalities.
Right.
Hell, you've even said you halfway like to do it. Now, he annoys me, and I hope you knock him out. Please put him down so I win this money I'm about to bet. So can we get a fight prediction? What round so I know which round to bet on? When are you putting him to sleep?
Now, I want to correct something. You said I halfway. Like, I like him. I like him as a person. You know, I mean, I really like him as a person, as a human being. I even invited him to the after party. I've been planning this many years to fight him, and we joined it together at an after party or something, and being able to commune with each other or whatever, you know, and the love on each other, because we're going to do it when we release our energy in the ring, you know, all the negativity that we have amongst each other, and we release it in the ring, we're going to embrace each other. We're going to love each other. Like we can say, we told each other we love each other in the ring, and that's the beautiful thing about this sport, where we can have so much animosity, and we can bring up so many old memories and current, you know, things that has happened in our life. But when we release that energy amongst each other in the ring, all that goes away.
Okay, release that right hand, please.
Yeah, see that.
Third round.
How much you gonna like it when he said he gonna press you and knock you out in the second round?
I mean, I love it. I love that. I love that because it follows into my plan. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. As he come forward, I don't have to do much but to bring it.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Champ! Deontay Wilder!
Move to the NFL, where most people have Joe Burrow locked in as the number one pick, but not everyone seems to agree. Friend of the show, Bucky Brooks, just ranked Burrow as the second best quarterback behind Tua Tagovailoa. Despite Tua's hip injury, the two guys are pretty closely matched, with Tua throwing more touchdowns and a slightly higher completion percentage. And while both guys have national titles, Burrow took home the Heisman this year with a record-breaking season. Any chance here buying that Tua is as good a prospect as Joe Burrow?
I'm buying that he's a better prospect.
Ooh.
And I really feel almost slighted, like, to be one of the guys who has to be a campaign manager for Tua and his body of work. Like, what are we doing here? All right, let's start here. In career passer efficiency in college football history, number one is Tua. Let's start here. The guy lost two games. And in those two games, one he threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, and one he threw for 295 and two touchdowns. Wasn't necessarily on him. Let's go here. He played for three different offensive coordinators and became Tua by all three offensive coordinators. No potential, and I'm not trying to indict Joe Burrow, but no potential being a one-hit wonder. No potential if you got to be married to Joe Brady or else. And we saw a body of work from Joe Burrow. He was at LSU before last year, y'all. Did y'all watch? Anybody? Okay. My point is Tua throws the best ball, most accurate ball. Numbers support that. He's a winner. Tremendous personality, spirit, leadership abilities. I don't understand why this is a conversation. Everyone's caught up in the one hit, the one season. I'll take Tua.
I love everything you said. I completely agree. I think he's a better prospect. You are now debating the elite coming out of college, and so I think this is a close second situation with Burrow behind Tagovailoa, but I love his pedigree. Nick Saban, he's a hard coach. You don't have guys in the NFL sparing your feelings. You better be ready to get some real criticism, especially if you're the quarterback of a franchise. And so I think that bodes well moving on to the next level. Alabama guys, they're almost allergic to losing. So I appreciate that pedigree as well. And yeah, leadership. The fact that he was able to keep that locker room together through the transition during the national championship game from Hurts to Tagovailoa. It speaks not only to the maturity that Jalen Hurts exudes, but also Tua. So, I mean, he's my favorite on this board, and that's not going to change.
Yeah.
If I'm basing it specifically off of prospect today, not what team they go to or anything based off of that, I'm saying Joe Burrow has to beat history in order to be the best prospect. All right? Think about this. As a Heisman Trophy winner, he just won it. Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin III, Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, Tim Tebow, Troy Smith, Matt Leinart, Jason White, Carson Palmer, Eric Crouch, Chris Wanky. I went all the way back to 2000. Tell me a Hall of Famer.
Well,
tell me a perennial All-Pro on that list. Go. You want to look at it? Go ahead. We could look here at Kyler, possibly. We could look at Lamar Jackson, possibly. Now show me the rest. All right, Cam Newton had a level of success, short-lived. He is fighting against the historical devalue that these other guys that have won the Heisman before him.
How about this one, though?
Okay.
How about that's not a bad point, but how about this one? How about this one?
Lord.
One guy's got an injury history, the other one doesn't.
Okay. He has less. Tua has less belief. Tua has less pressure on him coming into this situation. You know why? Because all of the spotlight is on Burrow. And now you'll see someone who,
okay,
depending
but the
on
question
where he
is,
goes.
Buying Tua as good a prospect as Burrow.
I just.
And again, I get prospect. And you take into effect injury history, availability, injury history. Are you built for the NFL?
I believe that Tua will have the better career because just based off of what I've seen, guys in Burrow's position, they do not pan out well for a lot of reasons.
Injury concern doesn't wobble me enough to get off the Tua train.
Right.
I'm staying on that damn train because the dude just shows too much.
I don't need a guy to last until he's 40. If I'm a general manager, I'm looking at the next 5 years. I'm looking
what
at
about the past two or three
window.
Years at Alabama? He hasn't been able to stay healthy.
He's also fought through injury. Very important asset to know about a player before he gets in the league. I don't know how many games I played 100%, but I'm going to guess zero.
Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Floyd Mayweather, who was finding ways to talk some trash, even though he's technically retired at this point. During an interview, Floyd took issue with LeBron James recently being named Athlete of the Decade, saying he should have won the award hands down, and that LeBron won it because he has corporate sponsors behind him. Both guys have accomplished a lot and made a ton of money in the last 10 years. Floyd won his 8 title fights and retired undefeated, while LeBron won 3 MVPs, 3 titles, and made 8 straight finals. Wanted to ask you guys, do you think Floyd has a point here?
No, not in comparison to LeBron James. He wasn't active enough, not enough big fights in this decade. He has no argument with LeBron James.
I think he's dead on. And it's no slight at LeBron, but there are some objective reasons why he's better than LeBron, and there's some subjective reasons. The objective one is, if you say we're splitting hairs, you're comparable. Team sport or individual sport?
Mm.
Individual. Because team sport, somehow, some way, somebody helped you. Right. Whether it's kicked out, oh, he made the three. Oh, somebody came and played defense with me. I subbed in and out. Floyd walks in that arena. We're not looking at anything else but Floyd and his opponent. You stand in front of me, we go to war. So he wins in that category. Then you talk about record. LeBron has lost. A lot of people, when they start splitting hairs, saying, well, is he 3-6 in the finals? Floyd is 50-0. Donut. So then we go Floyd again. Now you talk about the most important of all these line items. How much money did you make? And Floyd Mayweather, Forbes list. Every time the Forbes list comes out, who's the number one athlete paid? Floyd Mayweather. I don't even know where LeBron gets a case in terms of going against Floyd. Just he gets a case.
Wait till you get over.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wait for that. But to me, Floyd wins this. And for 2 decades. I'm not even saying that he should have won this decade. Should have won both decades, the last two. Floyd's undefeated.
I got the case, too. It's the Associated Press decade, athlete of the decade.
Hmm.
They picked LeBron as athlete of the year 3 times between 2010 and 2020. Floyd never won it once. I would also say that LeBron changed the business model when it comes to free agents in the NBA. He changed how superstar free agents do business. Short contracts, choose where I go, set my agenda, and decide where I'm going to play. He transformed the way the NBA operates, both on and off the court. And for all of Floyd's success, I can't say that about him.
To me, it's harder to carry 14 guys than worry about yourself.
I get you.
One, LeBron never picked his opponents. Floyd has picked a lot of his fights and picked a lot of his opponents.
Mm.
Floyd has never dealt with a three-headed monster like Golden State.
Mm.
And being down and dealing with adversity where he was down 3-1 to come back and win the championship. He's never dealt with nothing like that.
Right. Was he ever the underdog?
He was never the underdog. Hold on. And with Floyd, just because he makes the most money does not make him the best athlete.
That helps?
No.
It will make him
the most successful.
The most?
It will make him the most successful athlete.
I just gave you line items.
But he's not the best athlete.
I'm going to give you one other aspect of this. There's arenas that Floyd hasn't even competed in that dictate who gets Athlete of the Year. When you start talking about Associated Press Athlete of the Year, it isn't just a measure of your accomplishments in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
They start trying to measure the man. And a lot of times when you start measuring the man, and again, so LeBron has competed in all arenas in terms of not just squeaky clean. It's like, okay, I done started a school. I'm doing X, Y, and Z. He's tried to be bigger than basketball. And that is something the Associated Press weighs when they start handing out athlete of the year. Ooh. It's not just wins and losses and stuff like that. So Floyd hasn't even attempted to compete in those arenas. And if he were, if we started counting his competing, he'd be losing in a landslide given the knocks on his
character. Okay, way to dress up the likability conversation that the Hall of Fame struggles with. Oh, you got top three numbers, but you wasn't so likable. I hated your post-game press conferences. You know what? You're not going to third ballot. Get that out of here. I got machine gun. LeBron didn't pick his opponents, but he picked his teammates to go to war.
He could have picked. If I could pick Charlotte,
some dudes. So don't act like he went in under man. Floyd always gets this reputation that everybody he fights is washed. You know why they washed? Because when you watch Floyd fight them, they become washed. Before Floyd fights them, they're not always in their prime, but most of them were, and they get washed. Now, Jordan started the short contract. Stop giving LeBron all that credit. Jordan did the one-year deals when he was in Chicago.
$30 million.
Thank you. And last but not least, the biggest switch and the biggest equity build for an athlete is not LeBron and Jordan taking short-term contracts. It's pretty boy Floyd, who was undefeated and getting undervalued and turned himself into money Mayweather. Means you love me or you love to hate me, but either way, you're going to watch and become the highest paid and undefeated and best record.
But listen. So you give him more credit for doing something for him. LeBron did something for every player in the league. It's players that's at the end of the bench that don't get no minutes that's making $1 million just because of LeBron. It's players taking...
And winning rings they don't deserve.
But it's making it to the NBA is a big feat. You know how many people try to get to the NBA that can't make it?
What do you think is harder? Making it to the NBA or becoming who Floyd is? Becoming LeBron or becoming Floyd? Which one's harder?
Probably becoming Floyd.
You know that. What do we all say? Getting in shape, getting football shape, getting basketball shape, but
it's easy to worry about you. Shape. It's easy to worry about you. To take an organization that's never been to the championship, that's never won a championship.
Aww.
What you mean? That takes a lot.
Players from before. So,
let me ask you a question. You know what it takes to be great.
Yeah.
You know what it takes to take an organization to a championship.
Respect.
So you think that's easier? I mean, that's harder.
This is not an easy conversation. Which one is harder? It's more difficult to be that disciplined, go against the guys he goes against, and still unblemished.
And it's easier to worry about yourself than worry about 15 others.